Thanks, Brian. My talk will be maybe a little different than some of the others you've seen in this session, because I'm going to talk not so much about hard research data and some of those things, but philosophically what we in industry believe our approach should be and how we're going about that. So we'll start in with that. A number of the talks already have highlighted the main reason why I'm up here today, and there's a variety of challenges that we in the plant nutrient industry face. Globalization as never before, which creates all kinds of marketing issues, global need for increased food, feed, fiber, and fuel. I dare you to try to say that quickly. We have to produce more. That message has been delivered this morning already. Tremendous dependence of the fertilizer industry on petroleum energy. Petroleum is required in large amounts to convert nitrogen in the atmosphere to ammonia, as many of you are aware, and that constitutes the single biggest cost in nitrogen manufacture. And that ties into almost any other fertilizer that is manufactured. So petroleum energy is a big deal for the fertilizer industry. That's something we are always aware of and continually tracking. Record demand and, if not high prices, certainly volatile prices for both fertilizers and grains. We've been from 2008 with record high prices that we in industry couldn't even have imagined to now where we are today, back to more historical averages. And so that makes it very difficult for both the grower, the dealer, and the manufacturers to plan. What do we need to produce, and how are we going to get it from A to B, and what does the dealer need to buy? What's the farmer going to take? And we're in a situation today where everybody's kind of sitting on their thumbs and not much is happening, but yet we have an entire market to deliver in a fairly short period of time because there hasn't been much of a fall season this year. So tremendous logistical challenges when we have these wide swings in prices. And then last but not least, the potential impacts of nutrients on the environment. So we have a lot of these challenges. So what does that all mean for the industry and our stewardship? I want to share with you a little bit of information that we gathered from some grower focus groups a few years ago. Fairly small groups, groups of about 12 to 15 each at a couple of locations in the Midwest. And it was about a 2.5 hour session that these growers participated in, with a series of questions about their management practices, how they farm, how they make decisions, and working down to some fairly specific questions about their nutrient management. And I'm just going to give you a snapshot of a couple of things. One of the questions that the growers were asked was, how important is nutrient management? In other words, they were asked to rank different decisions that they have to make in terms of their impact on the final outcome, on the crop itself. So the growers said that they spend that the most important decision that they make is selecting the right variety. Now, this isn't intended to mean that this is fact. This is the grower's perception, that the most important decision is selecting the right variety, and that nutrient management decisions are second to that in its importance on crop yield and the outcome of the crop. But there's a bit of a disconnect, because they said they spend relatively little time on nutrient management decisions. Again, crop variety selection was at the top of the list. They see that as being most important, but they also spend the most time on that decision, studying hybrids and making that selection. But they spend quite a bit less time on nutrient management decisions, even though they see that as one of the important things they do. Now, there may be a variety of reasons for this, because in a lot of cases that decision is being made under the guidance of a crop advisor, a private consultant, so maybe the grower isn't the one actually investing that time in the decision, but this is a reflection of their actual decision-making process. So we have, there's a direct link there, but the growers aren't accounting for that in terms of it, the energy they spend in it. And in terms of some of the challenges they face, One of the biggest things that they mentioned, two of the biggest things they mentioned in terms of nutrient management are the time they have to spend in the field and the flexibility they have in timing of those applications, particularly with regard to nitrogen. And the recommendation, I mean, we all know that recommended best management practice is side dressing or split applications. And growers said, that is a real challenge for us. Bigger farms, more acreages to farm. They're shifting to post-emergent Roundup weed control in many cases instead of pre-plant or pre-emergent soil applied insecticides and herbicides. So the time in the field and the convenience of nutrient application is a big deal. It's a big problem for them, and anything that can reduce that for them is attractive. All right, some of the frustrations of nitrogen users. And this is kind of interesting in that the ammonia, anhydrous ammonia, and urea users, while they are the most price-conscious buyers, they are also the most dissatisfied with what they're currently doing. They're the ones that feel that there's more room for improvement, especially the ammonia users. They buy ammonia because the fertilizer bill is lower, but they're not really happy with what they're doing. On the other hand, the UAN users feel that they're doing a better job. And typically, now it's not exactly that today, but typically UAN users are the highest priced fertilizer of those three forms. Now, today it's a little bit reversed, but historically that has been the situation. So the people paying the most for their fertilizer, for one reason or another, feel like they're doing a better job. And whether or not there's a direct link there, I can't say, but that's what they reported. And some of the frustrations that they have with nitrogen management in particular is this narrow window for optimum application. I just can't get all the work done, and what if it rains and I can't get the fertilizer on, then I suffer serious yield losses. Price volatility is a major issue. The hazards and inconvenience of ammonia, the guys using ammonia like the price tag, but they don't like the baggage that comes with it. Material handling, and so a lot of these things speak to the convenience factor and the timing in the field and those factors in nutrient management. And they also talked about the possibility of N loss as being a challenge. And the growers, I would say, almost unanimously expressed frustration at being perceived as polluters. They don't like that connotation on their business. They consider themselves to be the ultimate stewards of the land. They feel like they're doing the best that they can to take care of the land and take care of those resources, but with all of the challenges they have with weather and their operations and everything else, it's kind of frustrating for them. So a lot of things, a lot of other comments that were made, but I think these are some highlights that speak to our discussion today. So let's get to the industry stewardship. I'm going to talk about four basic things in our industry stewardship that the industry is doing to help meet these challenges. And you've heard this morning about best management practices. I want to talk about that a little bit, reinforcing BMPs, that some of these things we've had in practice for many years. They've been around. We know a lot about how to manage the nutrients, and sometimes we haven't done as good a job as we might in integrating them into a full cropping system, but nonetheless, we as an industry are re-emphasizing those BMPs. The other thing that we have to have in order to do that is the research basis. Now, you heard Dr. Fixon talk this morning about the 4R stewardship. I'll make just a couple comments about that because Paul's already elaborated on that. But if you're going to take that approach, you have to have the research to support that. And I'll give you some examples of some of those things. Education and training of those crop management professionals, because the decision is in large part made, again, with that crop advisor. They are major players in that decision-making process, so we have to have a trained professional staff. And then the work in the industry, proliferance, as it will, of new products and technologies, and I'll put new in quotes there, and I'll address what I mean by that in a little bit. So these are four things that I think we in the industry are doing to take upon ourselves some of the stewardship for the many challenges that we face. All right, best management practices. Again, We support and promote a 4R stewardship, and as Dr. Fixon said, this is within the context of that cropping system with consideration for all of those cropping system factors and with consideration for all of those outcomes, whether it's environment or social or economic outcomes. All of those things have to be taken into consideration. This is a kind of our industry platform. We think that with this approach, these problems, these challenges can be met and the problems can be solved. So in order to define best management practices, we have to have that research base. And I guess I'll say that we can do better in this regard, both in industry and in government and in a lot of different sectors. We can do better. Agriculture invests relatively small dollars back into its industry in relation to some other industries. I want to mention also one thing that has been a change in recent years in the industry is the expanded scope of the International Plant Nutrition Institute, which used to be just the Potash and Phosphate Institute. In North America primarily, they've now expanded internationally and to include all nutrients in the scope of their mission. And so they're a major player in influencing research and education around the world and helping to implement best management practices through some of their activities. Projects like Hybrid Maize, which is a global project to evaluate BMPs in maize production and to promote BMPs. A couple of other activities that are supported by industry in cooperation with universities, a couple of specific research centers or centers of excellence, as it were, both funded by industry, a potash research center at Purdue University to research and understand potash and how to manage it better and how to get more out of that resource, and a similar group at Kansas State University, also funded by industry. Some of the goals of these two programs: applied nutrient management research, and we've heard some discussion about that today, that there is that some of that applied research is lacking, and that was part of our purpose in industry of establishing these projects. Second, graduate student training. We really have a deficit of good qualified graduate students coming through our universities. We wanted a vehicle to train students in specifically in applied nutrient management research. These are industry-funded projects. We provide most of the funding, although there's other matching funds from other sources. The industry provides most of the funding, and industry representatives serve on advisory boards to those universities, programs, and the participating faculty. So we think, personally, I think more of this kind of stuff needs to be done. Agrium, in terms of our own company, we consider ourselves to be one of the leaders in nitrogen management research. In the last half a dozen years or so, we've sponsored over 400 site years of nitrogen management research just in the U.S. alone, with a similar proportional effort in Canada, and also studies going on in China, in South America, and studies also starting up in Europe. So we see this as an extremely important part of our business, and we intend to maintain this effort. Another significant effort that Agrium recently initiated was a cooperative effort with USDA and Ardale Halverson's GraceNet group looking at nitrous oxide emissions from cropping systems. And the major emphasis here is nitrous oxide emissions. Now, the GraceNet program is much larger than that, but our interest is primarily in nitrous oxide emissions and evaluating certain best management practices in that program to see if we can find ways to reduce those nitrous oxide emissions. This is not an insignificant contribution. You know, when I went to management with what I wanted to do there, the first year, well, let's start out conservatively, and after seeing some of the benefits of that, we were able to significantly increase that funding, and it's allowed that group to take on some things that they weren't otherwise able to do. So we think that's an important contribution. Defining best management practices. It's a critical time for nutrient management research. We've heard that message today, but we can do a lot more. there are companies in the fertilizer industry that don't fund any research, and boy, it'd sure be nice to get them to participate in some of these kinds of programs, because while they're selling commodity fertilizers, and it's hard sometimes to justify sponsoring that research strictly on a sales basis or on a return basis to the company, sometimes you can't always put a dollar figure on the value. But in some ways, it's a defensive position, and defending the science and defending the technology, but we could use a lot more. Implementing the best management practices. So if we're going to have the appropriate BMPs to promote, we have to have the research, but it doesn't do any good if those BMPs don't get put into practice. And this is a major effort on the part of the industry, the putting out in the field a trained professional workforce that has training, that has certification requirements and continuing education requirements to certify as crop advisors. And this is operated by the American Society of Agronomy, but it's really an industry organization. Various companies encourage their people to greater or lesser extent to be certified crop advisors. And that means that we do have that trained workforce out there. And these are the people that are largely making those recommendations. The farmer is not, unless he chooses to be, is not left alone in making that decision. There's a whole team of trained professionals he can turn to, whether it's a private consultant or whether it's a crop advisor with his dealer from whom he buys products. And some people see that as a conflict. But part of being a CCA is signing to a code of ethics that you will recommend best practices. So that's a major effort that I think is just now I think we're beginning to see some of the fruits of that. It's taken a while to really have its impact, but I think we're beginning to see some of those fruits. Dr. Fixon this morning showed nitrogen discharge into the Mississippi drainage as having declined pretty steadily over the last, 10 or 15 years. And I won't say that CCAs are responsible for that. Don't necessarily want to take credit for that, but it certainly has to play a role if we're out there teaching farmers what to do the right thing. It has to play a role in time. And then lastly, I want to talk about new technologies and products and practices. Now, quite honestly, there isn't a whole lot really new in the fertilizer business. We've been working with the same chemistries for half a century, roughly, some even older than that. And even the so-called enhanced efficiency fertilizers, there really isn't a whole lot there that's new. But what's new is the emphasis that they're getting and the movement of those products from small specialty niche markets into mainstream agriculture in a large way. And the other thing that's new, I guess, is documenting the benefit of those materials on not just the agronomics, but on the environmental impacts of nutrients, and showing that we can reduce losses to the environment by using enhanced efficiency fertilizer technologies. You've seen a small amount of that data today. I'm not going to show you the results of that. It's being presented in other sessions throughout the meeting. There's a number of papers on some of those things. But in the interest of time, I'm not going to go into that. But there's plenty of data out there documenting those reductions. Some of the other things that we have going on, many sessions at this meeting and symposia on precision application of nutrients and using variable rate application, and particularly in relation to real-time crop sensing and managing the crop according to what the crop says it needs, and essentially listening to that crop and having it tell us what it needs and when it needs it. Some exciting things taking place there that address the right rate, right time, right place components of those BMPs. New products, coming back to that right source concept, that do enhance crop recovery of nitrogen, particularly much more happening in the nitrogen business there than with phosphates, but some things being developed there as well. Here's an example of, in the lower right there, one of those crop sensors measures crop canopy color. Many of you are familiar with these technologies, real-time sensing of that crop and correlating that back to a specific nutrient deficiency. I put new in quotes here behind with this enhanced efficiency fertilizers because, like I said, these technologies have been around for a while, and it's the newness is more in the adaptation and adoption of the technologies. Inside Agrium, we 3 years ago actually formed an entire business unit, Agrium Advanced Technologies, that centered around the development and marketing of enhanced efficiency fertilizers, which is really the first such effort in any major fertilizer company to do such a thing. A lot of the products manufactured by smaller companies and serving, like I said, niche markets and specialty cropping systems. And we see an increasing use of inhibitors and stabilizers throughout agriculture to combat these nitrogen losses. And also slow and controlled release fertilizers. And these are being recognized within our own government programs. In September, USDA NRCS issued a nationwide program offering cash incentives for the use of inhibitors and controlled and slow release fertilizers across the nation. Now, those products have been recognized as enhancements in previous years, but this is the first time an incentive has been offered on a national basis. So if I'm a grower and I'm considering using one of these products, I really need to get my behind into my local NRCS office and find out how to qualify, because if I can get $4, $5, or $6 an acre for using one of these products, and that product does a job that I want it to do, then by all means I should participate in that program. There are many different products with different modes of action, and I've talked in these national meetings in times past on those different technologies and modes of action. Just want to point out that there's a lot of different terminologies. They can be very confusing. The terms are not used interchangeably. Slow, controlled release do not mean the same thing. They mean different things and define certain types of products. Delayed release is also another term that refers to a specific product group. So there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of marketing materials that get put out there that create confusion. And so it behooves the user of any of these products to make sure they understand what the product does and whether it fits their particular need. If you have a problem to solve and you can match a product to that problem, then you can meet that challenge. But if you use a product that's not suited to the problem you have, you might get no benefit, or it may even be worse than not using the product at all. So it's really important that the end user and the crop advisor understand all the different technologies and know what each of them does and the specific mode of action, because the mode of action is important in understanding what it can do for you. So with that, how's my time, Brian? Oh, I got plenty of time. Well, I did come prepared to go through in just a brief review of some of these things, but I didn't know whether I would have sufficient time. But so just to make some distinctions between the stabilizers and inhibitors against some of the other slow and controlled release, stabilizers or inhibitors work on specific nutrient transformations. In this case, we're talking about nitrogen, whether it's a urease inhibitor or nitrification inhibitor. Some of the products on the market, these are some of the trade names that would fall into this group of compounds. Nutrisphere N is probably the newest technology on that list. Agritane or NBPT has been around for quite some time. DCD and nitropyrin have also been around for quite a long time. And usually most of the inhibitors contain one of those types of products. Nutrisphere is a little bit different chemistry, works on a different premise entirely. So that's the one thing on the list that is new. These products provide a specific benefit for a specified period of time. And if you have nitrogen loss that can occur during that period of time, then you may realize the benefit from the product. Then we have a group of compounds that are called slow release, but not controlled release. These are what we know as uncoated, slowly available materials that protect the nitrogen by delaying its availability. They're complex. Usually some kind of carbon-based compound, some kind of urea polymer, something like that, that require a biological or chemical hydrolysis or biological decomposition to release nitrogen into the soil. They may last for weeks up to many, many months. There are some of the products in this group that can last up to 12 months or more. These products are largely used in turf and horticulture because they're fairly expensive. You don't find a lot of them in agriculture, but there are a few new products that are on the market for use in ag. So we see complex chemical structures. Then the other group is we get into control or coated water-soluble fertilizers, and one of these is a product that's been with us for a long time, sulfur-coated urea. Sulfur-coated urea is called a delayed or a retarded release because each granule releases catastrophically. So that granule sits there and sits there and sits there, and when that coating is finally ruptured by whatever means, then all of the nitrogen within that granule releases at once. We call that a catastrophic release, and hence the term delayed or retarded release. And there are a variety of mechanisms by which that coating can be destroyed. And so here's an illustration of how that might work in practice. Sulfur-coated urea, we have a lot of variability in the individual granules, so they release at different times to give you nitrogen supply over a period of time. And then lastly, where most of the work has been taking place in the last couple decades is in the area of polymer-coated fertilizers. And this is certainly a major business for Agrium. Several of the products in that last point, the bottom of that list, are Agrium products, either products that we've developed or companies that we've acquired in recent years. These products give a greater degree of control over the release of the nutrient, and hence the definition, by definition, are called controlled release fertilizers as opposed to slow release. Their primary mechanism of controlling rate of release is soil temperature. Moisture is required, but temperature is the major governing factor in the release of nitrogen from these products. We can manipulate the coating to get all kinds of different release rates. We have products that release over a period of 18 months. We have products that release as quickly as 30 to 40 days. So we can design products to fit an environment and a crop based on its nitrogen demand and the kind of environment that crop is being grown in. And they work by a diffusion process as opposed to physical rupture of the coating like sulfur-coated urea. It's a diffusion process. Water is absorbed through the coating, dissolves the nutrients inside, after which those nutrients diffuse out over a period of time determined by the coating itself and the environment that it's in. Just a couple of pictures to wrap up, and this is the commercial part of the presentation. Brian didn't give me permission to do that, but I work for a company, so I can't forego that opportunity. This field split in half, two growers managing this. One guy says, yeah, I like the idea of ESN, a control-release fertilizer. The guy on the left said, no, it's too expensive. The following year, the guy on the left bought ESN as well. This is a study. Brian showed you that picture earlier today where we have strips across the landscape of different sources of nitrogen, including urea and some other urea-related treatments, along with the polymer-coated fertilizer. And the big thing here is that in this part of the field, in this low spot where the soil may be saturated for various periods of time through the growing season and denitrification rates can be very high, the use of some kind of improved fertilizer technology becomes much more advantageous. So with any of these products, any of these enhanced efficiency fertilizers, the greater the potential for nutrient loss, the greater the expected benefit. If you don't have nitrogen loss, then there's no value in using an enhanced efficiency fertilizer. You can apply it in a variety of ways and get the same results. So you really have to understand the environment, the cropping system, the product, and what it does, and then you can marry these things up in a way that provides, in some cases, almost a fantastic benefit. The yield differences here in this low area were in excess of 100 bushels per acre, the yield difference between the ESN and the urea strip. So that's definitely an economic value. So with that, just wrap up. Again, the world needs efficient and effective nutrient use. I'll take issue with a point Brian made in his talk this morning. He said we need to maximize nutrient efficiency. Well, we maximize efficiency at the lowest rates, and that's not very effective at meeting the goals that we need. So I'll challenge you on that point. We need to optimize efficiency within the entire system, because that nutrient use needs to not only be efficient, but it needs to be effective at meeting the goals of that nutrient or that crop production system. So I don't think maximum is the word we want to use there necessarily. With all of the challenges we have, what's that? My time's up now? Yeah, okay. Yeah. We can talk later, yeah. Brian and I are good friends, so, you know, it's all made in fun. With all of the many challenges and needs that we have, we think that the industry has its work cut out for us, but there are ways in place already that we can, by which we can address many of these challenges. We think the problems can be solved with research and education and proper management of those inputs, and we do our best to encourage the producers to use those nutrients wisely. But as we've said, the producers have many challenges that sometimes conflict with the best possible use of that nutrient. So we have to marry up the technologies and the education and the research with producers' practices and do things that help them and fit their system. So with that, I better quit because I think I've gone over a couple minutes. Thanks.